welcome to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Oklahoma leads the nation in female incarceration. Two-thirds of women in Oklahoma prisons are there for nonviolent crimes. There's overwhelming evidence that incarcerating nonviolent offenders is costly to state, to us as taxpayers, and counterproductive from both a personal and societal point of view. As such, policymakers have long looked for alternatives to incarceration for nonviolent offenders. One such program we are blessed with here in Tulsa has become a national model. Funded by grant support from the George Kaiser Family Foundation, the Women in Recovery Program of Family and Children's Services has made a meaningful impact in the lives of more than 95 women graduates so far, helping them get out of prison, continue their educations, and find gainful employment. Perhaps most importantly, participants of the Women in Recovery Program are able to reunite with their children, minimizing the impact of separation and stigmatization, and help breaking the cycle of intergenerational violence that is a major cause of the poor decision-making that leads to legal trouble in the first place. Our guests today are Brooke Martin, a Women in Recovery Program graduate and mother of four, Amy Santee, Senior Program Officer at the George Kaiser Family Foundation and their point person on Women in Recovery, and Mimi Tarash of Family and Children's Services, the Director of the Women in Recovery Program. Ladies, welcome to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm so glad you could be here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brooke Martin, I want to start with you, and I just want to ask you, what has the impact of the Women in Recovery Program been on your life?
Women in Recovery has had a tremendous impact, not only on my life, but on the lives of my four children. I was arrested for drug trafficking, and of course, I was an addict. I was an IV user, so really, I was a junkie. I'm raising my children alone in that environment. And after my arrest, Women in Recovery took me out, put me in a safe place, helped me reestablish as a parent with my children, taught me how to not be an addict, taught me how to change my thoughts, taught me how to change, how to use my thoughts to change my actions. And I can't even describe how tremendous the impact has been.
How did you hear about Women in Recovery? How did you get into the program?
I was already in jail. I had never heard of the program. The program was very new at the time. And I was evaluated, and it was found that I met the criteria, and so my judge allowed me into the program.
Mimi Tarash, is Brooke's story typical? That is, women who get into the program will make it through successfully and become champions of the program, become committee chairpeople of the program?
I think there's a continuum and there is a variety, and every woman brings something very, very different to the program. And when she leaves, she's something very different than when she started. Many, though, like Brooke, are very, very committed to their recovery and to the behavioral changes that they have made, and they want to stay true to that. They've learned a lot of new tools. They've learned to parent differently and function differently and be a different kind of employee, different kind of friend. And I think many of them walk away with a different skill set that actually contributes greatly to the community. Not all of them graduate from the program. We have about a 65% completion rate. So the program is very, very difficult. And not everybody is ready to make that investment in that change that's required of them.
So is it a situation where women who are lucky enough to be offered the opportunity are still, in a sense, wrestling with demons and have difficulty in achieving sobriety or attending classes or things? And, I mean, it sounds challenging, and they have to stay with it for what length of time?
Well, almost 2 years, though it's a very individualized program, and that time in the program will vary tremendously. But there is the availability, and certainly that's part of our program design to deal with their substance abuse and their mental health issues, as well as a variety of other things. And yes, you have to have a commitment to want to deal with that and want to reckon with those demons in the closet in order to really address the trauma that's been in your background.
Brooke, how old were you when you started using drugs?
I was older than most of the women in the program. I was 28. I began using, my first husband died when I was 26, and we've been married 8.5 years. And I remarried a man that seemed wonderful, be a great father to my children, great husband to me. And he ended up being very abusive. He was also, he was a drug user. I don't know if he had been all along or not, but he eventually was, and he was a drug dealer. So I began using with him as a way to deal with, you know, the trauma of losing my first husband, which I really hadn't fully recovered from that until the program. And really that's a process anyway. And then began using with him also to deal with the violence, with the domestic abuse. And at the time, drugs seemed to help bridge that gap. You know, we could communicate and get along better if we were both high. And he went to prison for the abuse. And by that time, though, I was an addict. And so I continued dealing drugs after he was gone.
And once you were in jail, your kids were taken away from you?
My kids were taken away. They were put in DHS custody. They were placed with a family member, which ended up being a very, very bad, very unsafe situation for my children. I have them back now, though. I've had them back for almost a year and a half. I've had full sole custody.
Wow. I'm glad to hear that.
Thank you.
Amy Santee, I want to bring you into the conversation. You work for the foundation that has really helped start Women in Recovery through Family and Children's Services here in Tulsa. What led you to Women in Recovery as a program, or conceiving of it, or what models did you use? And how are you, many questions at once, mm-hmm. how are you broadcasting your success?
Well, I'll start with your first question. George Kaiser Family Foundation is committed to breaking the cycle of intergenerational poverty, and we do that through a number of avenues. Most of our investments surround strengthening and improving the lives of family and children. So when we learned that our state had the highest rate of female incarceration and had the highest rate for many years, and we further learned the devastating impact that it had on children, we felt compelled to intervene. That's when we partnered with Family and Children's Services to develop the Women in Recovery program. When developing the program, we looked at many of the pathways that led the women into the criminal justice system, whether it be child abuse, physical or sexual, running away from home, low educational attainment, chaotic home environments. And we looked at all those pathways that were getting women involved into the criminal justice system and tried to develop a better response. Because what we know about our prison system in Oklahoma, it is underfunded. The majority of women who are sent to prison will not receive services related to the causation of their crime or what brought them into the system. So they will leave prison with the same addiction, suffering from the same mental health issues. They'll be reunited abruptly with their children without any help. They won't be able to find safe housing. They won't be able to find a job. They will be facing tremendous barriers because they now have a felony conviction. And so that what happens is the cycle will continue. They'll go back to those unhealthy relationships, and it just repeats itself. It repeats itself. So what we wanted to do was to achieve better results, and that's what we did through the development of Women in Recovery.
So given the success of the program so far, have other locales across the country come to Tulsa or sought your advice, either from George Kaiser or from Family and Children's, to help replicate the program or scale it up in other places?
I can speak to, in the state of Oklahoma, Oklahoma City has developed a program called REMERGE that has many of the components of Women in Recovery. There are a number of foundations, both in the state of Oklahoma and nationally, who have an interest in female incarceration and really trying to develop better alternatives. And I'll let Mimi speak to some of the folks that you've had at Women in Recovery who have been interested in your program.
Have you had other folks from outside come visit the program, come visit Women in Recovery?
We do receive calls and emails and inquiries, and we're wanting to be a little bit more active at the national level and certainly sharing the outcomes of the work that we are doing. I also want to state that the Tulsa community is very, very unique. And in addition to the funding that we see and receive from the George Kaiser Family Foundation, this has been a statewide issue, and I am really thrilled to say that I think the success of this program is because it is being supported and addressed at a community level. So we have many, many partners, 25, 30 partners that are very, very active in participating in the program. We have people that volunteer, from being with our children to doing mock interviewing to assisting in our GED efforts. And donating clothes, donating, you know, household items. So the community has really supported the work. And I don't know if there's a lot of other communities like Tulsa, but I think with the foundation and the other stakeholders that have really invested in our efforts, I don't know how replicatable that is, but there are certainly many, many takeaways of things that we have learned about substance abuse, about the work that we've done in a generational kind of approach with the children. So our partnership with law enforcement team. So there's things that we have learned that we would really like to share with other communities that we think have been effective.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann sitting in for Rich Fisher. And my guests today include Brooke Martin, a graduate of the Women in Recovery program. We're also talking with Amy Santee, a senior program officer from the George Kaiser Family Foundation, and Mimi Teresh, who's the director of Women in Recovery with Family and Children's Services of Greater Tulsa. And Brooke Martin, I want to throw it back to you and ask you, I read that you're an avid runner.
Yes, sir.
And athlete. I read a Tulsa World article about you that said essentially you traded one addiction for another. Can you comment on how, you know, what place running holds in your life at this point?
I did trade an IV addiction for running. I needed something to throw my efforts into. That combined with the fact that I had gained a lot of weight in jail. And so I wanted to find something healthy to do to try and combat the weight gain and, you know, to put my energy and efforts into. And so I started running. And at the time, I was on house arrest wearing an ankle monitor. So I started running around the backyard on the fence line. And by the time I left there, after a couple of months, I had worn a path in the backyard, and I just started running a little more and a little more, and did a 5K with Women in Recovery. We did the Susan G. Komen 5K, and that was a year and a half ago. And then after that, I did a 15K, and then a half marathon, and then a full marathon, and it grew. So I'm doing several halves this year, half marathons, and I'll do at least two full marathons and hopefully an ultra marathon.
Do I understand you also wear a black belt?
I am a second degree black belt and a nationally certified martial arts and kickboxing instructor. Yes, sir.
And where did that come in? Where did you do the training and how did you learn all those skills?
I started Taekwondo in the seventh grade.
Oh, wow.
With Kong's Taekwondo.
Uh-huh.
And I continued training. I trained in Bushido Kai Karate. And then started training at Martial Arts Academy. Then after I got my black belt, I started teaching kickboxing. And then I got my instructor certification and got my second degree and started teaching Taekwondo classes.
And you've been able to share some of those skills with other women in recovery?
Yes, sir. I've gotten to teach kickboxing and some self-defense.
I wanted to also ask you about the program itself. How responsive did you feel Women in Recovery was to your needs? In other words, if you had a complaint or something you thought could be better handled in the program, did you find the program leadership responsive to, you know, issues you had or questions?
Absolutely. At all times, there was someone available. And when you go in, you're given, you know, your own therapist. And, you know, so you have like one, you know, main go-to person. But you have groups with all the therapists. And so really, you can go to any of them. And anytime I had a question, a problem, a concern, if I was having, you know, something that was difficult for me to deal with, maybe something from the past or something that was currently going on, there was always someone to reach out to.
Mimi Teresh, it sounds fairly labor intensive, the program. In other words, there's therapists, there's substance abuse counseling, there's mental health, there's career training, right, or retraining. There's a whole educational component, right, GEDs and college courses. How do you fit it all together? Or how do you even know where to start?
Well, I think when you think back about the pathways that led women to the criminal justice system, there really is an opportunity to address in a very comprehensive fashion many of these issues. And I think that's why we look as comprehensive as we do. When the women first come into the program, they're with us 8 to 10 hours a day. And we also provide housing for them. So They're a captured audience, so to speak, and we want to provide in this second chance an opportunity to learn things that they perhaps didn't learn the first time, and we want to give them the tools and the ammunition to be successful in the community. So with that comes a lot of teaching opportunities, both in education, their mental health, and in substance abuse, and their overall recovery. They volunteer in the community so that they can give back to the many that are supporting their efforts. They come in with a variety of health and dental needs. So again, we reach out to our partners to address that. And we certainly built in pretty extensive case management in our day-to-day activities. Again, the family activity and the family reunification is a very, very critical part to our program. They're all very caring and loving parents. Their addiction oftentimes came before their children. So they want to learn how to be a different parent. They take those matters very, very seriously. And in those reunification efforts, they are learning how to be a better parent, a different kind of parent. And we are seeing the results of that in how their children are doing in school. Brooke can certainly attest to when she wasn't with her children versus how powerful and important it is to how successful her children are doing now. And I think that there are many alternative to incarceration programs, or certainly many treatment programs, but there really aren't a lot that are working with both generations. And we do that simultaneously. And we have new partners also from TU. We've always partnered with the Department of Psychology, but now we have TU Law School students and a legal aid attorney. So we can also, in addition to their criminal cases, really address some very complex civil and family matters. Again, they're with us for close to 2 years, so we don't have to do everything today. We have time to do things over the course of time, and we want this experience to be enriching.
You mentioned the two-year time frame. What happens after graduation? Is there an aftercare program? Do you continue to have sponsorship or a particular sponsor or therapist?
I want to say that what the most exciting thing about this program also is the support that we get from our criminal district judges. And so many times following successful completion of the program, women are getting a deferred sentence, which is very exciting. And we appreciate the work and the collaboration that we do with the judicial system. We have always had kind of a small aftercare program, but we have learned through research and our own experience and the short tenure of our own program how critically important it is to address and be a support system at the back end when life is really challenging with employment and their recovery and children and managing life on life's terms, as they say.
So, Brooke, you're single parenting, right, for children?
Yes, sir.
Wow. And are you mainly a student now or working as well?
I do work one morning a week, but I'm primarily a full-time student. I'm doing 18 hours a semester, and I'm graduating, by the way. Mm-hmm. And then being, of course, a full-time parent to four children who have their own homework and their own activities and, you know, their own little lives.
Well, congratulations on graduating. What degree or what major are you pursuing?
This time, I'm getting an associate's in liberal arts, mm-hmm. and the next semester, I will get an associate's in psychology. And then I'll go on for my undergrad, and then my goal is to go to law school.
I read that, and so you want to become a lawyer, and...
I do. I want to be a prosecutor, maybe someday a judge.
Wow. That's wonderful.
Thank you.
And I'm, of course, I mean, you've had so much firsthand experience with the legal system, I guess not in such a pleasant way, that that would certainly inform your career choice, but inform how you practice.
Exactly. And so much has been done for me and given to me that I would like the same opportunity to give to people who have been in my situation, give them second chances and be able to understand firsthand what they're going through, that people aren't necessarily just a bad person. Lots of times they've had bad things happen to them that have caused them to make some bad decisions and some unhealthy choices and deal with things in you know, wrong ways. But that doesn't mean that they are bad people at their core. Sometimes people just need help, and I want to be able to do that for other people.
Amy Santi, how do you measure success in women in recovery? Is it, you know, number of lives saved in a sense, outside of incarceration? Is it, you know, financial return on investment, to be somewhat crass? Is it, I mean, a combination of all of those things? How do you look at it?
I think it's definitely a combination. The bigger picture, the bigger problem the foundation is trying to solve for is that Oklahoma incarcerates at close to twice the national average and has for 18 of the past 19 years. So I think a larger goal is to really see a reduction in our female incarceration rate. For the specific outcomes that we measure at Women in Recovery, we're looking at, you know, a variety of measures related to, you know, the success, completion rates, when they were employed, what their employment rate is, how their children are doing. We look at, 10 different domains, and we have measures within each of those. So we track it closely, and we work very close. And the initial success of the program has been fantastic. And we're always looking at ways we can develop the program and respond differently as issues arise.
So it's pretty data intensive. Mm-hmm. I mean, so you're constantly collecting data, analyzing data, and are there, even at a couple of years, are there tweaks to the program itself in terms of how you manage different aspects of the program based on your outcomes?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, I think that we identify them every day, and we have the liberty to make those changes within the system, which is also formidable and important. We know how difficult the situation has been for children, so we are getting funded to do additional support for our children. We really want to address the trauma that they have experienced. But we also, they are living with a caregiver, so we want to provide support to that caregiver and make the home life for this child and these children as safe and as supportive as we can during the mom's transition. We also know how important it is at the back end in terms of how we can support graduates. And those are just a few of the many areas. Mm-hmm. But I think that we have to take a really mindful look every day in terms of what can we do better, how can we modulate our treatment, and are we always using evidence-based practices, and is there anything new in the field that we can bring to our program?
You're listening to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Our guest today, Mimi Teresh, the Director of Women in Recovery Program from Family and Children's Services, Brooke Martin, who's a graduate of the Women in Recovery Program, and Amy Santee from the George Kaiser Family Foundation. You mentioned, Mimi Teresh, you mentioned children, and I wonder, the women, I assume, are of various ages and must have, therefore, children of various ages. How do you, I guess, what is the age range of children from women in the program, and then how do you handle, I mean, in a sense, not having to have, I guess, a pre-K kind of education all the way through high school? How do you look at the spectrum of ages for the kids that are part of the program?
Well, today we have 97 women, 98 women in the program, and we have close to 200 children, and 178 of those children are under the age of 18. So just like there are many different approaches to our individualized care for our women, the same thing has to be in place for the children as well. So some we're finding are experiencing school challenges or school failures, so we want to make sure that our moms and our staff are making the right connections and providing the right educational support to the caregivers and stepping in with the school system where we need to. We want to make sure that children, again, are getting the counseling services that they need. Sometimes it's making sure that they have healthy activities after school. They're getting help with their homework, that they're part of the Scouts program or other extracurricular activities. And every woman's situation is very, very different, and we are identifying it and trying to be a support system so that those children, we can watch very, 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 very quickly when a mom is in the program and starts doing better. Those children, once those connections are made, also start doing better in their life. So the outcomes are pretty evident once mom's getting healthier and parenting differently and is dealing with her children different.
There were many reasons the foundation partnered with Family and Children's Services. But one very important reason was, outside of the Women in Recovery Program services, the entire agency has numerous programs and opportunities to partner with the participants and or their children when they need additional services.
So it is as one example, like the early childhood educational opportunities in Tulsa? EduCare, other types of things like that?
EduCare, Community Action Project. Certainly when women come into the program, we want to make sure that those children get a very healthy early childhood experience. So, yes, those would be a prime example of partnering and connecting them and linking them to appropriate resources.
So I read that of the high incarceration rate, which you mentioned in Oklahoma, twice the national average, mm-hmm. that 2/3 or more of the women who are incarcerated is for nonviolent offenses. Mm-hmm. Why is that?
I think it's a combination of lack of prevention and intervention services. I think it is because we have tough drug laws, we have mandatory minimums, we have enhancement statutes, and I think when you combine all of those together, it leads to high incarceration rates, high numbers of women going to prison. In fiscal year 2012, of the women sent to prison that year, 80% were nonviolent offenders.
And yet you mentioned, or I think Mimi mentioned, that judges seem so pleased with your program. So it's almost as if they're acknowledging that perhaps they wish they had alternative sentencing opportunities to sentence a woman to woman in recovery instead of to jail or to prison.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, early in the development of this program, when we went and visited with the judges, they were very receptive and very open to alternatives to incarceration. And we listened to them and we asked them for guidance. What do you need to see in a program that would give you confidence for you to trust the program and that it is actually a better alternative to prison. And they participated in those conversations and they've been supportive from the very beginning.
And we never wanted to widen the net either. And so if a woman is eligible for another diversion program, be it drug court or mental health court, veterans court, community sentencing, absolutely, that is their first place that they should go, and the judges are very cognizant of that. So if they don't meet the criteria, then it is truly a pleasure for us to go in and assess and hope that we will be able to provide yet another alternative to prison for them.
Brooke Martin, I want to give you the last word. What do you wish for your children?
Every parent wants happiness for their children. More specifically, I want my children to learn from my mistakes. Not only to learn what not to do, but to learn that whenever they do make mistakes, and they will, they do make mistakes and mess up, that's not final. They can always decide to come back from that. There's always, just because you make a mistake or you make two mistakes or you make 100 mistakes, doesn't mean you have to continue down that same road. You can always choose to make a good decision, and then another good decision, and then continue making decisions. And there might be consequences, but they can always change, they can always be better.
And if you don't mind my asking, what do your children know of your troubles? I mean, how do they perceive what you went through or where you were?
My children know everything. They were there when I got arrested, my house got raided. They knew that I was in jail. When they saw me be abused, I mean, they unfortunately do know everything, but they also know that people can turn around. They know that people can be better, and that just because you make many, many bad decisions does not make you a bad person and does not mean that you have to continue in that life.
Well, I want to thank you for your honesty and your bravery and congratulate you on your sobriety and your success in the Women in Recovery program.
Thank you.
So, Brooke Martin, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for
Mimi Teresh, the Director of Women in Recovery, and Amy Santi from the George Kaiser Family Foundation, I want to thank all of you for coming down to Studio Tulsa today. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that's Studio Tulsa on Health for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. Opinions expressed on Studio Tulsa are those of our guests and commentators and do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. If you missed a recent show, you can find all the audio linked on our website at publicradiotulsa.org. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.